This is the Paul Gough Audio Experience, whether you call yourself a PT, a physical therapist, or a physiotherapist. And wherever you're listening to this right now, this is for you. It is me revealing everything I can to help make you a more successful business owner. Thanks for listening. It means the absolute world to me.
Honestly, guys, it's amazing to see kind of so many people in the room coming back to these events, and equally the ops managers as well and the teams. The growth of this community and the scale that it's gone from, whether it was you guys in New Orleans, whether it's been Clearwater, the Bohemian, Vegas last year, the growth of this thing and to see you guys keep coming back is incredible. And even more so when I think and I look at the likes of Francis and Paul, our guests this week, and the start of their journeys, whether they've been in business, or Francis been in business since 2018, or Paul's just on the start of his journey. Every one of us started somewhere, and we're going to welcome some people onto this stage who've been inside of this community for 8 years, 6 years, 5 years, and generally doing some amazing things. But one thing I want to do, one thing I want to talk about very quickly, is I bumped into Todd at the side there after that session, and we talked about the growth and the development and talking about our guys and what we do as well, but it's incredible to see what you guys do. Every 3 to 4 months, we kind of get together with you guys and we come to, like I said, all these places and we see what you guys are doing. We see the development in you, not just you, but your teams, your businesses, and the ultimate output is your margins. And this little baby that you've created at the start of this thing is just growing and growing and growing and maturing, and there's more structure in place, and it's just so good to see. So without further ado, I want to welcome 5 incredible leaders to the stage here, right? And I'm going to start off with Beth Templin. I'd like to welcome you to the stage. Carrie Hosey from New Hampton, Portsmouth. Come up. Keep the applause going, guys. I kind of enjoy it. Jason Han. Chris Garcia. Oh, there you go. And Ross Nakaji. Come on up. Fantastic stuff. So, I'm going to kickstart this. So, for a few people who may not know these guys' journey and know about their businesses, we'll do a quick 60, 90-second intro there. Tell the guys a little bit about yourself, your business, and kind of your growth. Chris, I'll start with you.
My name is Chris Garcia. I'm a physical therapist down in San Diego. I have a cash-based business. Started in 2014. Did 2 years just mobile and gyms, and then we grew to our first location in 2016, and we now have 3 locations, 15 staff, and really trying to figure out what the next step is in our business. But ultimately, I've been in this group probably for 5 years. 5 years, and it's really helped us make those adjustments to be able to know when to scale, know when to hire, what to do with our staff. So I'm really grateful to be part of the community.
My name is Jason Han. I started my sole practice probably 11 years ago, and then from there opened up a practice with my wife. My wife is a chiropractor. Started with her, myself, and an admin, so a team of 3. Joined Paul's group, so that was about 7-8 years ago. Now we have a team of 14. We're a cash practice, so we're doing pretty well.
Hi, my name's Carrie. I'm in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I just have to count. I think I've been a member 8 years of this group. And I started off, I was solo when I joined and opening up my very first office. So I had plans to grow, and I've grown. And my business is cash-based. It's physical therapy and Pilates. And I think I have 8 team members now. But it's been fun. It's been a great journey. I've learned a lot. I'm still here.
Hi, I'm Beth Templin from St. Louis. I own a geriatric-focused clinic. We are mobile. We have a 5,000 square foot gym space where we treat and we teach 33 classes a week. I've started with Paul in 2017, so 6 years as a solopreneur, delivering care out of my house or out of my car, going to people's homes, and now have a staff of 17.
I'm Ross Nakaji. I'm from Los Gatos, California, so we have a practice out there. A hybrid, so we're out-of-network cash. Been in practice for 20 years, which is kind of a frightening thought. Just been in Paul's community for 5, and kind of transformed everything. And I think that was kind of one of those things about the 2020 COVID thing that kind of affected pretty much everyone. I think really kind of changes your whole perspective of what you're doing. And since then, we went from one clinic. We just opened our 4th last month. Turned a profit 2nd month, so pretty huge. And so we just kind of have this goal. We just want to keep going with it. And being able to have that flexibility to continue to grow. I've got 3 staff here with me, and you know, I'm just honored to be here. So thanks.
Love it. So Beth, I'm going to start with you. In the honor of this event of courageous leadership and effective management, the team of 17, you've got business for however many years. When did you turn from being a manager to a leader? And when did you realize that moment?
I don't know if I've achieved that yet, to be honest. I do think I've taken a bigger leap over the past year. So I started with a front desk who kind of became an office manager by default as we continued to grow. But I didn't have a true ops manager. I hired Heather 2 years ago as an office manager, and we upgraded her to an ops manager a year ago. And that's probably when I finally started to give things away. And I remember I had monthly calls with Luke, and he said, "What's the biggest problem to solve in your business next?" And I told him, "It's me. I'm the biggest problem in my business because I've done everything for so long and carried the weight on my shoulders, and it's hard to give up. And it's not for lack of trust of my team, it's habit. And I wanna solve the problems, I wanna fix everything because I have the knowledge in my head. So I struggle with being that protector and not wanting to empower my team." So that is my ongoing goal. And I've already given so much away in the last 2 days. They're like, "Can we do this?" I'm like, "Yes, please take that away from me." So it was very beneficial to bring 2 management members on my team here just to really get everybody on the same page so quickly and pass off more and more.
And what's that kind of then done, hiring the ops manager and getting that person in the middle? It's done for the team as well.
Well, I was always really good at loving on my patients. That's what I do really well. I never had the skill set of loving on my staff members the same way I loved on my patients, because I hired them for a role and I expected them to just be able to do the role with the right orientation and the right ongoing coaching. And just, so it's taken the stress of having to love on my staff off of me. I told Heather when I hired her, "I know that's my deficit. I need you to love on the team the way I love on our patients. And if you can do that, we're gonna do really well, because that's not something I do naturally."
And then just kind of following up on that is how, obviously you're in CEO and you work with 8 to 10 business owners there in the room and working with Paul. What's kind of one of the biggest lessons that you've learned, whether it's been from that CEO group, whether it's been from Paul, that's really drove your business forward?
I don't know. I mean, I've always had confidence in myself and being able to fail forward. I think it's just learning how to lead a team of people underneath me. How do I infuse my energy, my spirit into them so that they want to actually come on this journey with me? I'm going on this journey regardless, and if I can bring a solid team with me, it's going to make it so much easier and the journey is going to be so much more enjoyable. So how do I take the business of Beth and my energy and my passion and infuse it into my team? That way everybody gets just as excited when I come back with 100 changes after a weekend away of learning, and I don't burn them out or freak them out. Like, how do they know that this is just Beth?
Final question. What are you doing with all your time now? The ops manager's doing all the jobs.
I just told them I'm so excited. I haven't even wrapped my head around what I'm going to do with my time. But I'm excited to see how it evolves. Heather's goal for me is that I only show up to the office 4 days a week and I have at least 1 day off, or I take a week off once a month. But so that I'm just not there as much, so that I can't stick my nose into things that I don't need to be sticking them in. So the goal is probably more time outside of the business, not being there, trusting my team to do the job, do the thing.
Love it. Love it. Ross, I'm going to come to you next. You've been a component of this community for so long, and you're a regular attendee of these events. So as you've grown, business, personally as well, what do these events mean to you, your business, the growth of the team? You bring several members of staff every time.
Oh, wow. I think a lot of it is kind of the accountability, I think, is for ourselves. And I think that's really what CEO has really brought to me, is there's so many beliefs that we come into, especially when you go to PT school. It's to be the best clinician you can possibly be, to serve your patients. And you really forget that then you go into private practice and you kind of have to understand this thing called business. And for me, like I said, 20 years, at least 15 of those years, I was marketing. We'll let our marketing do itself, right? We'll do a good job. We'll be clinically excellent. It's going to take care of it. And so it was this really hard-headed approach where I was like, we're not doing that, right? And then the second part came to sales and those types of things. And I think the more I came to these events, the more I saw the community embrace those things. And I'm like, whoa, that's so foreign to me. And it has been this battle, this internal battle for so long. And I'm just like, I'm just not doing that. I'm just going to do it the old way. And I think that goes to prove for 20 years, you're in practice, you make a lot of mistakes, and then you start to realize, why am I making these mistakes? And so, our educational system rewards getting good grades and being right. But entrepreneurism, you've got to make mistakes, and you have to be able to learn from them, kind of be humble from them. So I think that was a big takeaway from these community events, was you have to see the business in many different ways, whether it's the marketing aspect, the sales aspect, the financial side, in addition to the clinical, because I think we do this because we're good at being therapists. So that's what we do. And now that switch has been just so different, because it's not, I think, this is kind of a funny story, but from being a little kid all the way through college, and any team that I've ever been on, whether it's beer league softball, I was always kind of like an average player, and I love that. I didn't want to stand out. And then when you're in practice for yourself, it's kind of you. And for many years, I kind of shied away from that. I didn't want to be the guy. And so I think it was always about trying to get everyone else going. So I still struggle with that today. And it's so much more fun to have a team of people that actually step up, and I can just hand some of this stuff off. And so it's a big learning thing. I think that's the biggest thing that I've embraced, is it's a constant learning that just never really ends. And so when you really do feel like you've got it, you still don't. So
I love that. There's a bit you talked about the internal battle, and Paul talked about this in Orlando at PPM, the idea that 95% of the time as an entrepreneur, you almost feel like you're failing. How do you conquer that internal battle, or how do you just navigate it so that you can actually use it as a tool for success and not for one that, potentially you use to beat yourself with, like, maybe I'm not good enough for that, I can't do this, and actually use it as a driving force?
I think one of the things is, and I just had a conversation with someone about that, is they said, okay, what is it with like having a coach, whether it's Paul or other coaching, what is it that helps you actually take action? And sometimes, as therapists, we like to sugarcoat things, so we don't really want to be upfront. Possibly being from California, we're a little bit more politically correct. And something about having someone who's very direct and just says it like it is, it's almost like at first it's like, oof, wow, that kind of hurt, right? But now it's like, okay, got it. I get it. I've been fighting that for whatever reason, because I was trying to be politically correct or whatever, all that stuff. But then once you really realize they're saying this because it's true, and the problem probably is us. And so until you're okay with that, it's a little bit of this ego where it's like, oh, I'm a good clinician, oh, everything will happen. And then when it doesn't, or you hit a major roadblock or make a majorly poor financial decision, you kind of have to go, oops, and I think that's the other thing too, is a lot of what you learn from Paul, what you learn from all these other different business coaches and things like that, they all kind of similarly say the same thing. And it's almost like a mindset you do have to shift, and it's not what we learn in school. And I think that's probably the biggest thing that you have to get over in to make that change for your beliefs.
Fantastic. And I just want to kind of circle back on something that Crystal said as well about the idea of, and we talked about this briefly with the team, but as you're bringing this back to the team and you're struggling with your internal battles,
How do you stay there in the middle? Like that middle zone, just, yep, I'm good for my team. We're moving forward. Is it a piece of advice that you've got in the background that's just sat there ringing around all the time?
Well, I think one of those things about you guys talking about maybe Paul ranting to you guys, right? So I think I definitely have to check the state. Like, where am I? Like, am I hot or am I whatever, you know? And I have to think about it, let that email sit or let that conversation sit, let my emotions kind of chill out before I come back and address that. So I think that's where that's been a big part of the growth, right? So I think I used to probably flip out a little easier, or I wouldn't say anything. It would be one or the other. It's almost like silent treatment or flip out, right? And I think that's getting a little bit more to the middle where you're dealing with more people. So I don't know if I mentioned, but we have 34 employees. So the connection to some of those people is very different. And the conversations that I have with them is very, very different. And so they just asked me, like, who do you vent to? And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, and they're like, well, you know, you have to vent to someone. And I go, well, yeah, I have to be careful because one of my partners is my wife, right? Another one of my business partners, we have four business partners, actually five now. And, you know, you have to pick and choose your battles. It just can't be flip out and this and this and that. So I think what I've really, the takeaway to this is to be an entrepreneur, to be in business for yourself, you just can't be really surprised by anything anymore. I used to be surprised, like, or when this happens, it'll be okay. Or, man, it'll be great when none of this stuff, this turbulence, it just smooths out. It never really smooths out. It's really just how you take it. And there are more days now, in probably the last couple of years, where something really shitty happens, and I just giggle. I'm not kidding. I'll sit at my desk and just be like, this is freaking hilarious. And, you know, my business partner's looking at me, he's seething, you know, he's bright red, and he's like, how could you be laughing at this? I'm like, because shit happens all the time. So let's just figure it out, you know, and he's like, okay. So I think that's been a big part, is just the mental state that I have to check myself and where I'm in.
Awesome. Awesome. Carrie, come to you next. If you pass the mic down, Russ. So for our 100% attendee, CEO member, how many other badges are on the bottom of there?
I don't know.
It's like a roll call down there.
There's more events than he didn't do pens at the beginning. Yeah. So
So you've been with Paul since 2016?
16, yeah.
Yeah, one of the OGs and the originals. You've obviously seen the growth of this community and everything, but also alongside your business. What's kind of the one moment that was a big turning point for Carrie in her journey that just was like, that was it. That was when things started moving northwards.
Yeah, for me, I really struggled at the beginning, building a team, hiring, and, you know, I resonate a lot with what Beth said, and I just wasn't able to crack it. I had tons of turnover, and I remember it was like 3 or 4 years ago, like just everybody was gone again, and I said, okay, I've got to fix something here, and I remember having a conversation with Paul and like going to CEO, and you know, the being a leader of one was probably the turning point for me. I didn't really know what that meant, and I had to really recognize, like, okay, like I have to manage me before I can go in and expect to manage anyone else. And it took a while, like it was, because I'd gone through a lot of like personal stuff, and I definitely didn't do as good as I, you know, could have in leaving that at home type of thing. And, you know, it was probably the best thing that ever happened, because now I'm, you know, I guess what I learned too was I used to think, okay, I can't have that emotion or I can't feel that. And that was like a struggle for me for a while. And then I kind of clicked for me that, no, that's you. You're still you. You just have to check it and not react to it. You can still be pissed. You can have your moments and scream or whatever and swear, but like you just have to do it and then move on. And when I started to master that, things really changed for me.
Talk to me a little bit more about that leader of one and that conversation with Paul.
Yeah, like I think I went in, this is when I was like, I was coaching with Paul, and I think I went into that call feeling really shitty, and then I think I was like expecting him to give me some kind of like, okay, do this, and he didn't. And I think, you know, he just was like, talked me through, you know, that concept, and also I remember him talking to me about like, I tend to think a lot about like what if this doesn't happen. And this is when I joked yesterday about the whiteboard. He did, I think, get this out on our call, and just that idea of like, living like 10% in the present, like 10% here, but really like, okay, the present is, you know, what matters, and it's like real time, real response. It was sort of the concept he was basically going over, and that's something that has really helped me to navigate through that.
And what's the compound effect of that on the team?
I think, I do the best I can. I definitely check myself, and I, as I'm driving into work or whatever, I smile, literally smile on the way in, or if something's like, if I'm not having a good day or something has happened. And I just really try to think through, I try to make it not about me. Like I think, okay, I know how I'm feeling about this, but I'm the entrepreneur, I'm the leader. I'm gonna be thinking about things in a way that I can't expect anyone else to think about. So I just try to, just like I do with clients, I think that's what makes me good at marketing. Like I put myself in their shoes. Like, what do they need to hear from me right now? What is the message they need to hear so that what I need to happen can resonate?
I love it. I think the biggest thing that I can see there is that it's the humbleness and awareness to know that it's not all about you. It's not just you that's in this business, and it's not you driving this thing forward. There's a team behind you, and you've got to act maybe it's an act or a certain way, or you've got to put that thing on and go, yeah, I've got to get through this for my people behind me.
Yeah, I'm at the point now, like I cannot, if I had to like do everything in my business now, and that happened like not that long ago, and then it kind of hit me. I said, oh boy, like I love these people. I need these people. Like I need this to work now, because I kind of don't want to go backwards, even though I could. I don't want to.
And how does just to wrap that all up, with the coaching side of things, to keep that momentum moving forward all the time? Because it must be very easy to slip back into the old ways, to not smile on the way into work, to take, as Ross said, to get a little bit more hot-headed. How does the coaching side of things, or being around these guys on this stage or in the crowd, really help you keep that kind of center point?
Yeah, so our CEO group is pretty tight. And, you know, myself and a couple of other members of my CEO group, we have a call every single week. And we get together. We never miss without fail. And that's huge for me and for us. And I think it just really helps to, you know, get those things sorted out. And, like, you know, the two people I talk to are, they're opposite of me, which is good for me, you know, and I just think it's just that accountability of, you know, I kind of can save some things for that call, and then at any time I can call anyone, anyone from your team, anyone here, and that's the best part of this group.
Awesome. Jason? Keep it clean.
Do my best.
So to start, for someone who's been around, obviously for the guys that maybe don't know in the crowd, obviously you've just recently left LAFC, and for being around elite level sports and managers and coaches and team members like this. So what's the one thing that's really kind of, whether it's from that or whether it's from Paul in the room, who's really accelerated that for you, that's just you and your wife, and then now I look at you, you've got Jesus in the building, massive team behind you, doing some great things.
Yeah, I had a unique experience, right? So being in pro sports the last 6 years while running a clinic, while having a family, and just talking to Paul recently, is I've been a lot more reflective as of late. So this is an excellent question. I think the first thing that joining the, when I say club, soccer, I mean, let's be proper, football club. When I joined the football club, what it really did was it pushed me out of the business to work on the business instead of in the business. And I think, as like Ross said, like we always want to, from a clinician standpoint, we want to be the best. We don't want to let go. We don't know how to hand off. And the business at that point, I was maybe at 50% treatment. And then I needed to get to a place where I needed to hand it all off to someone else. So I think that it forced me to be that person. I think that's number one. Number two, I think working in professional sports, and I'll talk strictly from the clinician standpoint, is like the idea of building the relationship does not change, right? Whether you're working with in the clinic or with professional athletes, you're developing that relationship to build trust so they can ultimately do what you want them to do. That's from the clinician standpoint. The uniqueness of it all was that while I was the boss at a business, I was also the employee of a club. So I really took that opportunity to learn and to try to put myself in the shoes of my employees. And if any of you know me, I'm naturally a little bit hot-headed. So like I was either an abdicator or I was like the dominant one. And if you talk to my staff of 14, they'll talk about like early on, like, I remember that time Jason flipped out and blah, blah, blah. I think I've calmed down a lot since then. But within the, if we talk about like the football club itself, as an employee, early on, it was a new club. I was in the inaugural season. There was a lot of excitement. We had good players. We had good community. There was this sense of you're part of something. And you fast forward now, we win MLS Cup. We hit these, we have big players that are coming in. Then it becomes much a bigger business. So as an employee in the club, I start to see the changes of like what was missing. And if we reflect back to being a leader, like what do our employees want? What does our team want? They want to belong. They want importance. They want to be celebrated. They want to be part of something bigger. So that really gave me an idea of like, that's what I needed inside my business, if that makes sense. So it gave me a really good perspective from that standpoint. As LAFC goes on and then that disconnect happens because the company is now a $1 billion business, I'm dissecting what's not going right. It's leadership. It's management. It's because in the beginning, you're bootstrapping it, just like every single business of ours. We started as a sole entrepreneur and you just throw it out there and it starts to work. But as you scale, it's like, oh, holy crap, I actually need systems. I actually need to be a good leader. So I've had numerous conversations with Jesus and Paul and Simon and everyone on this team about that was what I was seeing. I was seeing the disconnect of they were losing track. They were focusing more on partnerships and then getting into other countries and then big players, that they were losing focus on who was getting them there. And we talk about it. The way that we achieve is with our people. So that was always the message that I was in my head. I was like, this is why LAFC is not working for me at this point. But I would do everything in my power to make sure it happens in my business. So I think that was a big learning experience in its whole.
Talk a little bit about focus. You talk from a business standpoint, you talk a lot about belonging, and Jesus is here, and Jesus has been, you know, an integral part of this community as well over the past 12, 18, 24 months. Talk to me a little bit about how you guys have used coaching together of a community to really leverage your business over the last, say, 2-3 years.
I think first and foremost, I think Paul talked about the left side of the column. He exhibits all of that because I will call him my ride or die at the end of the day. And you talk about hiring, there's something about that person. And I'll highlight Jesus as far as he started as, when he initially interviewed, he interviewed as an admin position. He didn't get the position. He interviews 2 years later as a marketing assistant and he gets it part-time. Within a month, 2 months, he's full-time. I was like, this guy has something. He's in this room. It's me and my current ops and myself. So he's privy to leadership type of conversations. When my ops decides to leave, first guy I talk to is him. And I say, like, what should we do? How should we divvy this up? And we were just talking about it. So I go home. I tell my wife, this is what happened. He calls me an hour later. He goes, I can do it. He goes, I can do it. I'll give you 5 years. No question. I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, let me call you back. I call my old ops. I was like, Alana, Jesus wants to do it. She's like, oh, shit. I turn to my wife. She goes, oh, shit. So I think that alone speaks for itself. The kind of person that he is, knowing his humble upbringings and stuff like that, my goal for him, for everyone in my team, is that I want them to, whether they stay with me or not, I want them to be better than they were when they came in. And I told him, I was like, if you're with me, I'm gonna fucking take care of you. Because he exhibits that. So with that being said, not being emotional, it was a learning experience. It was trust. It was just talking with him all the time. Like, what's going well? What's not going well? How can I help you? Even though I was with the club, he had 100% access to me. And I made it a point that I was at the facility and at my clinic minimum 4 or 5 times a week. And each one of those days, I was always with him. So he's been a huge reason why we've been able to scale, why we've been successful, because number one, he treats it like it's his own. Number two, he loves the job, he loves our employees, he loves the challenge. None of us like the difficult conversations, but he embraces it because he's in all the mastermind calls. He did the management course with you last year. Like, I just started to throw everything at it because I trusted him, and I was like, okay, let's see where we go.
Just to wrap it up very quickly, you've been on an incredible journey, obviously, with the team, with the football club and stuff like that. If you went back to the first day that you met Paul, what's one thing you might say to yourself differently?
The first day I met Paul?
Yeah. Or do we want to know that story?
Well, I'm incredibly grateful for you, Paul. I did not know. It's crazy, you know, the things in life that happen. And Paul was at my clinic a few months back, and early on in this whole journey, one of the reasons why I joined, because we've all been there. You're a sole entrepreneur. There's 2 or 3 of you, and you're working 60 hours a week. You're barely making it, and you're like, "Fuck, is this going to be my life? Is this going to be my life?" Because you don't know how to scale. You don't know how to hire. You don't know how to lead. And I had a double stress because my wife and I were trying to have kids. We had to do IVF. IVF is over $100,000 at this point. So you're like, fuck. And then there's all these things happening that you just didn't think you can get out of. But like, yes, from the tactical side, there was a business growth school and accelerator and all these things. But I think the magic that he's brought to me is, like you said, just being able to control yourself, being able to control your emotions. Because if there's a storm inside you, you're going to be a storm for everyone else. And when he was over at my clinic the other, a few months back, I made it a point to bring him to my house. Because meet my wife, see the house I was able to buy, meet my kids. Again, there's the whole IVF thing. Like, without him and this community and the coaches, I would not be where I am now. And a lot of my life and a lot of the choices, not just options that I have now, are because of this, of him and this community. And just my thing would be, holy shit, I know you're going to do all this shit for me, but thank you.
Jesus, has he calmed down yet? I said, has he calmed down yet? Yeah, baby set, love that. Chris, I'm going to comment on you there, buddy.
Of course.
Talk to me a little bit about the journey of, you know, scaling to three locations.
Yeah, so on paper, the three locations sounds really big, and that's exciting. But that journey is, as you guys can imagine, is not easy. So kind of coming back to where I started in 2014, I started solo, just going to the gyms, much like a lot of you, just trying to hustle, just trying to figure it out, working 70, 80 hours. And at the time, I wasn't employed. I didn't have a job. I had no choice. I had just finished working pro sports, and I knew I had something I could deliver at a higher rate than anybody else in my local community. So I literally figured out a way that I can just approach people. My skill, my superpower, as you say, I just love people. I just love developing people, whether that's a client, my staff. So I met people, and I was able to help get them better. And over 2 years, I developed a 5-6 week wait list. And I was like, I got something here. Like, this is unique. And my wife and I, we were trying to have our first kid, and we kind of looked at each other and we're like, all right, we're going to do this. We said, yeah, let's try. So we get pregnant, and working 60, 80 hours doesn't really work well with a newborn, as you guys know. And so as we were about 3 or 4 weeks away from having our first child, the gym owner where I was working, he says, hey, next door is going to open up for you. Do you want to take that space? I need the back space. You take the front space. I was like, oh, that sounds great. We're going to have a baby in 3 weeks. Can we like pause this? He says, no. We're signing today. Like, we're signing tomorrow. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. He said, yeah, we're going to go on the first. I said, okay, well, we have a couple weeks, so my kid will be born a little bit later and we'll be able to do this. So I signed the contract and I'm like, oh, perfect. We got like 1 or 2 more weeks. And they come a little early. And so they came the day before I got the keys. So my wife delivered on the 31st, August 31st, and the gym owner calls me the next day. He says, hey, rent's due and I got your keys. And I said, oh, that's cool, I'll be there tonight. He's like, no, I need to check today and I'll hand you your keys. So my wife, who was postpartum one day, we started renovations with our first facility day one with a brand new newborn. And, you know, my wife and I started the practice. She's a physical therapist. So it took 2 years to get to the point where we can open a practice. And I did the opposite route than everybody else. I hired way too fast, too many people, and I took too many risks. I hired 17 people in a year. Does that sound crazy? Everyone here, eyebrows. Shit. I love people and I want to nurture and I want to develop every single one, right? You come to my clinic, this is my house, your house, we'll do it together. And the problem was, that was great, but I didn't have all the A players to take that and lead with me. And at that point, I struggled because I brought 17 people with no processes, zero. Where's the handbook? I don't know. Where's the bathroom? I don't know. I got a bunch of patients in front of you, let's go. And that sounds easy. But you know, people's lives change and all these other things. So as you can tell, I know Paul at this point, I knew Jason. And Jason's shaking his head and this guy's hot-headed. He's like, what the F are you doing, right? So at this point, I'm trying to figure out like, what do I do? What's the best strategy for me? I got 17 people who are right behind me, some are further back. And I just didn't know what the next step was. So I joined the group and we started to kind of figure it out. So I went from like 17 to 10. I had to get to a core, right? Like I had to get to my core group, and I found my 10 and their lives changed and COVID happened, all these other things. So I dwindled down and I came down to like 6 people, and we went from 17 to 6. Now we're back up to 15. And after today, we might come down a little bit tighter to the central core. And over this journey, we've expanded in staff, but we've expanded in locations, not because I wanted to. Believe it or not, it's not because I wanted to. It's because people literally said, you have something special. We have a gym so far away. Would you be interested in housing, like moving your locations here? And for me, I was like, that's an honor. I love people. Give me opportunities. I'll take a risk all day, every day. And I took the risk. And I opened the second location within a few years of opening our first, because somebody literally said, hey, there's a space available. Well, I didn't do all the numbers to figure that out. I was like, let's party. Let's do this. So now I'm a little bit more calculated. You're like, all you guys raising your eyebrows, like, this guy's crazy. But that's me. That's what I love to do. I'll take those things. But now I have to step back and say, is this the right thing? Because it's not only me anymore. It's my staff. It's my team. I put them at risk. And that's what I failed to do as an owner. Like, you know, congrats to you, Ross. You have 5. And that's amazing. But what I realized was I was doing everything for myself. And I knew this would work. I know we can serve more people. But I forgot about one of the most important customers, which is my team, my staff. That's what I failed to do. And that was my fault as a leader. And yeah, I'm a great leader. I could have been a better leader in the past. I am where I am now because I made those mistakes. And my core group, my ride or dies, they're here. They're here with me. Christiana, 6 years. She used to be our babysitter. People like that. Jesus to Jason is Christiana to me. She was our babysitter. She asked, hey, can I help out the front desk? No. I told her that, literally with that finger, no. 17 years old, watching our baby at our clinic, was just born. The baby was just born, so we brought the baby to the clinic. She's over here watching, helping, and she's like, she sees the phone ringing off the hook. She's like, can I answer the phone? No, nobody answers the phone like that. I answer the phone the best. So while I treat, you sit there, you wait, and I'm gonna answer the calls. And she just did that. She shook her head, fine, do whatever you want. And I finally said, hey, can you take a call? She was pleasant, she wanted to help people, and I was like, all right, you got something there, perfect. And then she was like, hey, do you wanna, can I help with marketing? Because we need more, we hired 17 people. How do you not market when you had 17 staff? And she was like, can I market? I was like, perfect, she did that. And then she just grew, and she was like, hey, can I be the coordinator? Can I do this? I was like, no, not doing that either. You don't know how to manage people. And then she, yeah, right. That, she should have said that, like, neither do you. So as we went through this process, like, at every step, I said no to her. And she came up, and I was like, this girl won't stop. And it was like, you got a talent spot. This literally, this person's right under your nose, and you're like, I wonder who's going to be great. And they're like, me, you know, just so. At that point, I realized that there was something special in her, and I brought her up, and now she's our operations manager, and it's fantastic. And now she's coaching, you know, people who are 10 years older than her, significantly more years of experience and practice. And, you know, what Paul's message was about a young manager and those type of things, those are real. And so as a leader, you have to be able to find out, like, how do I help that person conquer that? Like, those are internal fears. So, you know, we've gone from our first location to our second and developing these individuals. And we acquired our third location because we acquired a cash-based practice who couldn't figure it out, who went too high on staff, who did all these other things. I was like, I know what you're doing wrong. Give me that. I'll take that. So we acquired a third location. And here we are today with three organically, only because we just want to help more people. We want to expand in our community. We're dialing in our leadership. We're centralizing to our core, hire the right people. Believe me, this is not as easy as it sounds. I'm still making a lot of mistakes, but I don't care. At this point, my people here who are my ride or dies, like, they don't even care. If I say I fucked up, they're like, sounds good, what do you want? Literally, Diego, my marketing assistant, the day before, he didn't know he was gonna be here until Wednesday. Annual review, I said, you're horrible at leadership. Literally, I used that word, horrible, right? I'm working on my leadership. We said, on a scale of 1 to 10, I said, how aggressive do you want me to be? He's like, 10. All right, perfect. You're a 4 out of 10 in leadership. You're horrible. And he was like, oh, okay. But he took it, right? He just took it all that. And he said, I said, hey, we're going to Vegas. He's like, all right, well, what do you want me to do? I was like, what do you think we're going to do? He's like, I don't care. I'll shine shoes. What do you want me to do? And I was like, that is what I've developed and nurtured over the last 3 years. He's been with me for 3 years, Christiana for 6, other employees for 5, for 4, for 3. They're just growing with me. And at that point, I at this point in leadership, as we grow and scale, my job now is to develop them, create a massive vision for the company, and just put people in the right seats. And at this point, like, this is my passion. So I have done everything that they have too. I'm struggling right there with them, but all I can do is put better people right there with me, and it gives me the platform to be successful. So that's my journey from 17 to 10 to being horrible to doing all these things to a babysitter. That's my story.
Just quickly, talk to me a little bit about that. You talked about being so, you know, risk heavy, you got that heavy personality, go, go, go. What was it that when you met Paul, that was kind of, you know, this guy from Hartlepool can actually help me?
Yeah, you know, and the irony of all this, if you guys didn't hear that earlier, Paul's gonna be in San Diego this week, so we'll go out to dinner. So we met at a restaurant. So I was taking a course. Paul was an attendee at a course where I knew what he was doing now, but he was in a course for a business coach who was teaching other physical therapists on business. And there's Paul sitting in the room with, I think, Jared Carter and you and some other people that were in there. And some way we connected, and he's like, hey, you want a dinner? And I was like, oh, that's fine. So my wife and I didn't have any kids. We're like a year or two into practice, and he has one. And he starts talking to me, and I'm like, I'm just talking about, you know, what's the opportunity, what can I do? And he just had a different spin on, like, an approach. You know, I didn't know I was gonna hit 17 employees. I just thought, like, if I hire and I have leads, people just treat. That sounds easy. That doesn't. But he was a little more calculated. He just kind of talked about, like, he just asked questions. I was like, what? 17 employees, just make them work. And he's just like, But like, how are you going to do this? Why? And the strategy. And he just made me think constantly. And I was just like, there's something different because of that. It just made me think. And it was my wife and I who were having that barrier of like, no, we don't do that. We don't need anybody. We can figure this out on our own. And like, that's completely stupid. Just because you did PT school doesn't mean that you can do business. You didn't. This is a whole different school. So yeah, for me, it was just the constant questioning. And the thought process and strategy was completely different than what I had seen before.
Been told to use this one. I'm quite humbled, to be honest. I always am when I try and sneak in at the end here and listen to the stories. Like, you guys have just done so well over the last few years, and it's been great, like, to watch it. And like, for me, it's an, like, I'm almost speechless with it. I remember that night in Bernini's, and like, to me, I just want to talk to you. Like, it's like, I don't like, do you know what I mean? I love the business side of it. I love people being successful, and I love being around people that have got a little like energy and a little bit of a magic. And it's like, that's where, I don't know whether I gravitate to you or you gravitate to me. It's probably a two-way thing. So I don't really do anything other than that's just my natural sort of inquisitive view of life and questions, and, you know, kind of the way I see life. But it's wonderful for all of the stories, whether it's Beth, was it 2016? When I came to St. Louis, 2016, 2018 in St. Louis, Carrie's clinic, 2019. No, I did the five cities in 5 days. That was 2019. Yeah, I came up to your clinic, came up to Portsmouth. And I remember coming up thinking, God, this is a beautiful place. I'd love to bring the kids, right? And it took me 4 years, but I got there, right? And COVID got in the way, I guess. But 4 years later, I took the kids back to Portsmouth. We stayed in Maine. So all of these like stories and all of these journeys for me are just fantastic. And I've got so many with all of you, whether it's Todd, we're meeting in the tavern, you know, one night randomly just sat there on our own. If you like, there's wonderful connections and stories with everybody from the first time. Ross, I said to Luke, I said, make sure you drag this guy up and get him on stage. I said, because what I love about Ross, he's got such a wealth of knowledge and information. And what I said on the stage yesterday, where I said that the most successful people, that they don't have an ego. They have an ego which is like a fuck you, I can do this, right? That like you have to have, and don't lose that. And if you haven't got it, or somebody's like curbed that in you, get it back out. Like, you have to have this like fuck you. I am better than you, but I'm not better than you, right? There's like a two-way yin and yang paradox kind of thing that has to go on. Don't let this one run wild, but equally it has to. So you have to have the ego that says that you're better. Otherwise, like, just rock up, right? Just like give up. But what I love about Ross, and I always say this to everybody in my team, Ross is like so successful. The business is amazing. The lessons he's got to share with you, the life lessons, drags his team to Tony Robbins events, to retreats and all sorts of shit, right? This guy's incredible. But I've never once in all of the years I've met him ever felt like he's too big. He's too big for us. And he just comes to these events. He wants to share. He wants to give. He wants to ask a question. He wants to, whatever it is, he'll give it to you. And I think that's, again, amazing as to what we've got here and what we've built. And the people that I've got on stage here is amazing. So, Ross, I don't think I've ever said that to you. But we always talk about Ross is to, can I say that you would be like an elder statesman almost? Am I allowed to? Would you be offended?
No, not at all.
No, and I heard the word... I heard the word politically correct. What does that mean? What is politically correct? You'll have to. Is that an American term, politically correct? Because I think it must have missed my vocabulary, politically correct, at some point. So you'll have to teach me about that one. Maybe I'll learn it in California this week. No. That one was definitely removed from my dictionary, politically correct. It wasn't in Paul's dictionary. Speaking of dictionaries, I think we need to get Chris one so that he just switches that conversation from terrible to could do better. Like, just a little tilt. Like, there's not that much, you know, there's not that much. Madness and genius are very close. So we're almost there, Chris. So let's just tilt that a little. Who was it? Who was it he said it to? Was it you? Okay, well, he's happy. He's smiling. He's happy. You look at him. There's something going on here. You've got something going on. But I love it. The thing that I wrote down, and I always sit and listen to the stories, It's the personal transformation that I hope you all obsess over. I say this every time. I'm like a broken record. The the personal growth. I've done this now for a long time, and I talk to the team candidly sometimes, and I sit back and have a beer with them, and they'll always ask me, like, what makes them different? What makes these guys different? What makes you guys different from people who candidly come into the community, then leave, and they take a program and they don't do anything, or they sign up for something for a year, then they go, oh, this doesn't work, and, you know, yada, yada. It's the commitment to the personal journey that somebody's on. And that's the bit that I like to share with you, and I do genuinely believe makes the difference. For me, it's a lifelong quest, and it's one I'm addicted to, and I love it. And because the deeper I get to the personal side of understanding life and just interacting with it differently, it changes. It becomes more fun. It becomes more joyous. It becomes easier, dare I say. There's still shit goes on, but it just becomes easier to deal with. We're all taught, and we're all funneled through this kind of system, this matrix, this like one size fits all kind of way of life. Must do this, must do that. And everybody's doing their best. Our parents are doing their best. Grandparents are doing their best. All anyone's doing is what they know with the information that they've got at the time. To me, it became pretty obvious that it didn't work. Like, there's so much unhappiness, so much frustration. Even the rich people with the cash, they're miserable as fuck. They're still hanging themselves, right? They're still on drugs. They're still shit relationships with kids. So I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't need that much more proof that none of it makes sense. It can't be more money. It can't be more fame because there's rich people unhappy. It can't be more fame because there's famous people unhappy. So there's got to be something else to it. And this is where this kind of concept of the out-to-in kind of life, where I started to realize that pretty much everything outside is not going to make me happy. I'm more likely to get the outside if I focus on my own kind of life and kind of understanding it differently and evolving as a person. And what I see with you guys, and when you do go on the personal journey, you genuinely, this is the way I could describe it to you. You start to interact. I could never tell this one to my kids yet, right? But as time goes on, the way I would explain it to them, for me, as I've evolved, hopefully, I interact with the world differently, so it interacts with me differently. So we get different outcomes. The same kind of thing can happen to you or I, and I'll see it from a different angle. And you might be frustrated by it, and I'm kind of going, oh, okay. Right, and that's the real magic, because I'm not spending time there being frustrated. I'm not asking why that happened to me. I'm not worried about why a staff member left. It's like, it is what it is. That's the way they are. That's the way people are. Like, I'll change my view of the world. And a lot of it is realizing that it actually isn't anything to do with me. It might be a little bit of the system that I've created, right? I mentioned, like you mentioned earlier, a few people left. Yeah, like, we have to look at that and go, people keep leaving me. Why is that? Right? But they're not necessarily leaving me per se. They're just leaving the system or the kind of the way of doing things right now that I'm responsible for. So I have to take ownership of that, but it's not a personal thing against me. And when you start to separate that, it becomes much easier to move forward. The interacting with life differently, remember that. I don't know how at this point to explain it to you better, but I'll try over the next few months and years. But when you start to go on the journey and you start to understand yourself better and see the world differently, that's genuinely what has happened to me. I interact with the world differently. Therefore, it reacts differently to me. Probably the best story I could give you, I don't know if this will work, but when Xander was born, it was a head fuck, right? It was the biggest head fuck I've ever been through. Just the most bizarre period of time. And I felt like I was living like an out-of-body experience. And the way that I explained it to somebody, it was like, have you seen Harry Potter? It was like I woke up one morning and there was a letter right underneath the mat. And it was like, there's this world that you're going to have to go to, Paul. And you have to go to this train and you have to get on this train. And no fucker else knows this train's there. Nobody else knows it's there. You're going to have to get on this train. And you're going to have to go through this wall. And nobody else knows you're walking through this wall. And you're going to get on this train. And you're going to get to this place. You're going to get to this Hogwarts. And when you get there, it's going to be all right, right? But then you're going to have to go home on a night and you're going to have to go back to your other world. And then the next day, you're going to have to get back up and get back on that train. And then you're going to have to go to this world where Xander is and the potential life of, you know, what might come for him further down the line. It was like I was living an out-of-body experience. And the world, I was interacting with the world differently because I started to see it differently. And one of the things that started to happen to me was one of the biggest fears I had was I wasn't going to be able to connect the two worlds. that I had this weld with Xander, right? And I was petrified that I was going to keep staying in this Hogwarts, right? Which was cool when I was there, but I didn't really want to be there. And then I come home to my kids, and it was like my other three kids, and it was like, oh, this is back to Paul, right? This is back to this world. And I genuinely, for the first time, experienced life in a almost an out-of-body experience, where I was interacting with people differently originally because of Xander, and then I'd come back to this other world, and I experienced how you choose to see the world and how you choose to kind of let the world and wherever it's going to take you influence how you feel. What I had to do is I had to merge the two worlds. I had to figure out how to merge the kind of Harry Potter Hogwarts world with Harry, Tobias, Grace, and Natalie, you all. And that took me so long. That didn't take me too long. It probably took me about 8 weeks, 2 months, in all honesty, to get these two worlds to merge. And then I started to realize that I was interacting with the world differently because I'd been to this other place, right? It's such woo-woo shit, but it was true, right? I'd been to this other place mentally, seen things differently, experienced things differently. Stuff touched me differently. I was like in pain in places I'd never even experienced before. I was laughing at things I'd never laughed before. I was crying at things I'd never cried at before. Like, I was such a alter ego almost got created on the 15th of December. And I had to bring the two together, but I experienced life and how I interacted with life very, very differently in such an acute period of time, if you like. So I don't know whether over the last 12 months for me that's been exaggerated or sped up because of Xander's arrival and the obvious kind of potential life or issues or things that in the beginning you're worried about. But I genuinely experienced interacting with life differently because of that. And it's been the most powerful experience I've ever had. I don't think I can really do it justice yet, but I will try over the months and the years, that when you experience life differently and you interact with it differently. I had to interact with life differently the day that Xander was born. There was just nothing I could do. I had to do it. But because of that, I found new ways of enjoying life. The relationship with Natalie's better. The relationship with the kids is better. I have more fun. I've got more energy. I'm loving life even more. There's nothing really pisses me. There's so many things now where I think, I thought I was happy on December the 14th. And it was like, I thought I was doing all right. And in terms of the personal side of Paul, and I almost had to go into hell to come back out and come up and be like, wow, that's even better. But a lot of it was because I think I had to interact with life very, very differently. And therefore I see the world differently and it interacts with me differently now. But you've got to go fast. So I don't know if that helps, but essentially we're all on a personal journey that's challenging, and it's gonna go wherever you want. And most of this shit, there's a phrase I always used to use, life's what's happening to you while you're busy planning something else, right? That's the story of your life. Whatever life's going to be, it's going to happen while you're planning something else. So we all worry about these things, and you worry about your kids, and you worry about your job and your income and all this stuff. And then you just get blindsided one day. That's going to be your life, and you got to be ready for that. And I think in a business sense, you're busy planning your budget and your marketing plan. Meanwhile, your front desk girl's planning on quitting next week. That's the resilience. That's the life. That's the train track was over here. You got to go over here. And it's like, okay, let's just deal with it and bring it back. And I think the people that can't do that and who keep taking it personally, who don't figure out how they feel about all of the stuff that's happening around them in life because they expect everything to be perfect, I think those are the ones that really struggle. And in business, it's absolutely true. If you can't figure that shit out, it just eats you up. And it's like 5 to 10 years of hell, basically. But the faster you can get on with it, and the faster you can deal with any of these things that come your way, and you interact with it differently, you see it differently, I think you can make a hell of a lot of progress in your life. And that's when you look at somebody who's like, wow, they went through that, or they've experienced that, but look how well they're doing. It's because they were able to interact with whatever happened and deal with it emotionally very, very quickly. So I don't know if that helps. All right, good. Thank you, Ross, Beth, Carrie. She's still here? Oh, there's Jen. Oh, good. Round of applause for Jen, please. Day two, she's still here. Thank you. Any more resignations? No, we're good. Good. That's the one we wanted. Good. Yeah. Jason, Chris, see you in Bernini's. Is Bernini's still open, by the way? We've got to go to Bernini's this week. We've got to go to Bernini's. Close that out. Luke, 10 out of 10. Thank you. All right, round of applause for the guys. Thank you. Woo! Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to Paulgoff's audio experience. If you're brand new to Paul's world, head on over to paulsmarketingbook.com, where you can get started with his number one best-selling marketing book for physical therapists. Or if you've been listening to the show for a while, you like what you hear and you think that you could benefit from this type of help to accelerate the growth and profitability of your practice, reach out to Paul's team at paul@paulgoff.com and tell us exactly what you're looking for. And by the way, if you know someone who would benefit from today's show, please share it with them. And if you've got any questions that you want answered, tweet Paul at the Paul Goff using the hashtag AskPG. You can also find all of these details over in today's show notes. All right, until next time, have a wonderful day.